church organization and practice. Note: this section sets forth a tentative basic vision for the general contours of church organization and practice through its initial phases of growth to the point of reaching a more mature, stable status. This section is subject to change as real-world practice reveals the need for adjustment and further detail. As the church grows, this section will be expanded and changed as needed. In the church's early phases, many provisions in this section, such as numbers of members per ward and length of time as a member before ordination, will of necessity be waived. Name of the church. The name of the church shall be the Church of the West. First principles of church organization and governance. The first principle of church organization and governance in all church affairs is following the triple path by seeking wisdom, practicing virtue, and laboring with hope. Second, that we respect and follow the traditions and values of our ancestors. Third, that all things shall be done by common consent of the church members as represented by the qualified voters, that there should be absolute transparency at all levels of the church and in all decisions and actions, that all aspects of church administration and governance should be done as locally as possible, and that the members, qualified voters, and stewards of the church watch themselves always, that they act with wisdom and virtue, to seek that they never lead the church astray to choose evil instead of good, for if they do fail in this, their wrong choices will sow the seeds of the church's destruction. Fourth, that no action shall be performed in the church, and no action should be taken by the church as a body, that is contrary to this book. Fifth, that all things be done in an orderly manner with much prayer, meditation, and faith, with wisdom, virtue, and hope. Sixth, that each church member and steward has an unceasing duty to ensure there is no abuse or corruption in the church. When abuse or corruption of any kind is discovered, each church member, and especially each steward, has an independent, solemn duty to speak up and do what is necessary to ensure that it is promptly and decisively stopped, and that perpetrators are held to account before civil and ecclesiastical authorities. Seventh, in no church meeting should any one adult be left alone with a child or youth, or with multiple children or youth, who are not the adult's own child or children, and any adult who acts in any capacity in the church that involves children should first pass a thorough background check and receive regular training on recognizing and preventing abuse. Church units of organization. The most fundamental unit of church organization is the family. Families organize themselves into congregations, smaller congregations as branches, either unrecognized or recognized, stewarded by a chief elder and two vice chief elders, larger congregations as wards stewarded by a bishop and two vice bishops, and governed by a ward council of the qualified voters. 5 to 10 wards are organized into a diocese stewarded by an archbishop, two vice archbishops, and a diocesan council of 12 elders. When there are at least 10 dioceses in a designated separate geographical or political area, such as a country or a U.S. state, then they are organized into a province stewarded by a cardinal, two vice cardinals, and a provincial council of 12 elders. All stewardship positions are held for limited periods of time and are filled by sortition from a list of those deemed qualified to serve by the qualified voters of the wards involved. At all levels of the church, newcomers should prove themselves over time to be faithful, trustworthy, and true before being given responsibility. Wards, but not branches, dioceses, and provinces shall each be separately constituted legal entities. Title to church property is held by the local congregations, making frequent and regular use of that property. Qualified voters. The church is governed by its qualified voters. A qualified voter has been initiated and still complies with the requirements for initiation, actively participates in the ward, demonstrates a wise and virtuous disposition, has been married and never initiated a divorce without just cause. For any person baptized before the age of 18, the marriage requirement can only be fulfilled by being married in the church to another member of the church, has at least 3 children of good moral character who actively participate in their wards, with allowance to be made for those with deceased children, and for converts to the church whose children were not born within the faith, to the requirement for church membership, but not as to number of children or of good moral character, and fulfills basic age and sex-adjusted physical fitness requirements established by the General Conference. A male qualified voter must also be a priest or elder, who still complies with the requirements for ordination to his office. Private practice. Anyone not living within the geographical boundaries of a duly organized congregation of the Church of the West, who wishes to be counted among the congregation of the faithful of the Triple Path, and participate in its rites, may administer the rites at home, within the family, but still taking care to ensure that all qualifications are met before administering them. Generally, such rites are administered by the Father, or in cases where the Father does not desire participation in the Triple Path, by a grandfather, uncle, or other close male relative. The person administering rites within the family would administer them to the other family members, and then self-administer them to himself. In cases of individuals wishing to join the faithful, the rites may also be self-administered. The rites of ordination, initiation, marriage, and burial may only be administered within an officially recognized congregation of the Triple Path, or by an ordained elder from a recognized congregation acting under authority of the province or diocese if no province has been organized covering that geographical area. Unrecognized branches. When more than one family or household of adherents to the Triple Path reside within about 30 minutes travel from each other, or other similar, reasonable distance, they should organize themselves together into an unrecognized branch. They should follow all the same procedures as a recognized branch, except they may not ordain deacons, priests, and elders. Instead, males should be designated as acting deacons, priests, and elders to fulfill the required functions. Recognized branches. Once established, unrecognized branches should apply to the province within which they are located, or other provisional interim authority, if there is not yet a province, to be recognized as or organized into a recognized branch, hereafter referred to just as a branch. Before they are recognized or organized by a province, they shall be known as an unrecognized branch. A province or other provisional interim authority may also directly organize members living within a geographical area into a branch. After a branch is recognized, all who have received any rites of passage should receive them again as if for the first time, and qualified males should be ordained. If credibly attested, regular attendance, participation, and prior observance of the church's rites, feasts, and practices while the branch was unrecognized may count toward the prescribed times required for receiving the rites. If there is no one meeting the qualifications for ordination as elder, a priest may be ordained as chief priest, as well as two vice chief priests, until there are men in the branch who qualify as elders. Anyone who has received self-administered or private rites who later joins a branch or ward should newly receive the rites through the branch or ward as if receiving them for the first time. Wards. When a branch has at least 100 active members and sufficient qualified voters to fill all the necessary positions for a well-functioning ward, then it is organized into a ward. Once a ward has 200 active members and sufficient qualified voters to fill all the necessary positions for two well-functioning wards, then the diocese should recommend that the ward be divided and suggest boundaries that would lead to an even and equitable division, both in terms of geography and the number and level of experience of members. The ward division is finalized when the ward's bishop and vice bishops concur and 3/5 of the ward's qualified voters have agreed, after any modifications to the boundaries according to their best judgment. Anytime a ward is divided or goes through a boundary change, its qualified voters retain their qualified voter status in the new ward. The defining difference between a branch and a ward is size. In most respects, they should otherwise function identically. Accordingly, in most parts of this book, for brevity's sake, only the term ward is used to refer to either type of congregation. Any major decision about ward governance must be approved by the qualified voters. The number of votes each voter may cast is equal to the number of the voter's children in good standing in the church, even if they are adults and even if they do not live in the ward, plus one. Wards, on most matters, operate with a great degree of autonomy, so long as they follow the principles of this book. Branches are administered with more direct involvement of the diocese. Any person meeting the proper requirements may apply for status as a qualified voter. The current qualified voters of the ward decide whether the person fulfills the necessary requirements, and if so, accept the person by a 2/3 majority of votes cast as a qualified voter, the rest of the qualified voters of the diocese must vote by a two-thirds majority of votes cast to ratify that decision before it takes effect. When a qualified voter moves to a ward in a different diocese, that person must reapply for qualified voter status in the new ward, and only after at least 1 year of residence in the ward. The title of the steward of a branch is chief elder. He is assisted by two vice chief elders who act in his stead when he is absent and help him fulfill his duties. The title of the steward of a ward is a bishop. He is assisted by two vice bishops who act in his stead when he is absent and help him fulfill his duties. Other than a difference in title, the role of each position is virtually the same. In most parts of this book, the term bishop is used to refer to both bishops and chief elders, and vice bishops is used to refer to both and vice bishops and vice chief elders. The bishop or chief elder selects an elder in the ward or branch to serve as ward or branch secretary. The secretary generally should have the experience of having already served as a bishop or chief elder. He performs clerical and administrative tasks for the ward and can offer advice to the bishop or chief elder. His position, however, is not an ecclesiastical one, and he therefore does not have the authority to act in the bishop's or chief elder's stead, nor is he ordained to this stewardship. All bishops and vice bishops must fulfill the same qualifications for ordination to the office of elder as described in the rite of ordination of elders. The bishop and the vice bishops administrate the ward in accordance with the direction they receive from the qualified voters. They are accountable to the qualified voters. The bishop and the vice bishops should delegate as much as possible to spread the burden and the blessings of experience. All qualified voters in the ward make up the ward council. Bishops and vice bishops must meet with the ward council at least once a month to discuss ward business, plan future courses of action, to seek counsel, and for the qualified voters to vote on ward business and to approve persons to receive rites before they are presented to the ward in Sunday sacrament. A bishop normally serves a term of 2 years. When the stewardship of bishop becomes vacant, if the qualified voters of the ward approve, the first vice bishop is ordained bishop, the second vice bishop becomes the first vice bishop, no ordination is necessary, and a new man is selected and ordained as the second vice bishop. In the normal course of events, a ward steward serves for a total of 6 years, 2 years in each position. Whenever the bishop is absent or removed from his position, the first vice bishop acts as bishop. The second vice bishop acts as bishop in the absence or removal of the bishop and first vice bishop. If the stewardship of first vice bishop becomes vacant, then the second vice bishop becomes first vice bishop. When there are disputes between members of the ward, the bishop and vice bishops may jointly adjudicate those disputes, or if the bishop or one of the vice bishops is an interested party in the dispute, then the dispute should be taken to the diocese. Ward conferences should typically be held every 6 months during communal sacrament for the conducting of special ward business and the sharing of inspiring messages. On the Saturday evening 4 weeks before the ward conference, the qualified voters of the ward meet during their regular monthly meeting to counsel together about the ward and make binding decisions for it. Generally, a bishop's or a vice bishop's term expires at ward conference. Thus, at this meeting, the qualified voters select the next ward steward to be ordained at ward conference, as well as selecting men to fill positions made vacant since the prior ward conference, if the man left his stewardship early because he was removed or moved away. The selection is made through sortition. When the qualified voters meet, each should carefully assess the qualifications of all men who have not already served as a ward steward, who are priests or elders, to determine who among them is best qualified. No man should serve more than 1 6-year course as a ward steward, unless there are no other qualified men in the ward who have not done so. No man should serve as ward or branch secretary for more than 3 2-year terms. At the meeting, if only one stewardship is being filled, the qualified voters individually rank order their top 4 choices from 1 to 4, with their top choice receiving a 4, and their lowest choice receiving a 1. Each score is multiplied by the voter's number of votes. The score for each ranked person is added together. The 4 selectees with the highest scores are then announced. If there is a tie for 4th place, then one name among those tied is randomly selected and placed on the list. Each of the 4 men must then affirm whether he is willing to serve as a ward steward. If he is not, then the next highest scoring man is announced and given the opportunity to affirm whether he will serve. This continues until a list of four men willing to serve has been obtained. One name is then selected at random from the four, in full view of the assembled qualified voters, generally by writing each name on an identical piece of paper, placed into a hat or bowl, and then drawing one name out. That person will be the new ward steward. If two positions are to be filled, then the qualified voters rank their top five choices and the two selectees are chosen from five highest scorers. If three positions are to be filled, then the qualified voters rank their top seven choices and select from the seven highest scorers. In all cases, if there is a tie for last place, then one name among those tied is randomly selected and placed on the list. When two or three names are drawn, the older man takes the higher position. If any of the three have not yet been ordained as an elder, he must be ordained as an elder before being ordained as bishop or vice bishop. Both ordinations may be performed in the same rite. Any of the remaining men on the sortition list who previously have not been ordained an elder may also be ordained an elder if he so chooses. Men selected to serve as ward stewards are presented to the ward for approval three times. They are then ordained at the following ward conference. If one or both of the stewardships of vice bishop become vacant, then the bishop may designate any elder to be acting vice bishop until the vacancy be filled at the next ward conference. Every adult member of the ward who has been baptized and confirmed and is in good standing should have a position of responsibility in the ward allowing him or her to contribute to the ward's smooth operation and success. For example, some such positions would be those of Sunday school teacher, music leader, organist, pianist, and usher. Geographical boundaries and ward membership. Residence determines congregation. When a member or prospective member resides within the geographical boundaries of an established ward, then that person should participate in and attend that ward. Anyone who lives within the geographical boundaries of a ward of the Church of the West and who wishes to be counted among the congregation of the faithful of the Triple Path and participate in its rites should do so by participating in his or her local ward and receiving the rites within it, and not through self-administered rites. Dioceses. A diocese is governed by its qualified voters. It is stewarded by an archbishop, a first vice-archbishop, a second vice-archbishop, and a diocesan council made up of 12 elders. If there are 12 or fewer wards in the diocese, each ward should have at least one elder on the council. If there are more than 12 wards in the diocese, the number on the council should be expanded to match the number of wards in the diocese, and each counselor should be from a different ward. Once the diocese has grown to more than 12 wards, it should begin the process to divide into two dioceses of roughly equal size. No diocese should ever have more than 16 wards. Diocesan stewards should delegate as much as possible to spread the burden and the blessings of experience. An archbishop normally serves a term of 2 years. When the stewardship of archbishop becomes vacant, if the qualified voters of the diocese approve, the first vice-archbishop is ordained archbishop. The second vice-archbishop becomes the first vice-archbishop. No ordination is necessary, and a new man is selected and ordained as the second vice-archbishop. Typically, four members of the diocesan council are selected each year. They serve 2 years as junior counselors, 2 years as counselors, and 2 years as senior counselors. In the normal course of events, a diocesan steward serves for a total of 6 years, 2 years in each position, whether on the council or the archbishopric. The qualifications for serving as a diocesan steward are the same as for ordination as an elder, except that a man must already be an elder to be voted onto the sortition list for a position as a diocesan steward. The archbishop selects an elder in the diocese to serve as diocesan secretary. The secretary generally should have the experience of having already served as an archbishop or diocesan counselor. He performs clerical and administrative tasks for the diocese and can offer advice to the archbishop. His position, however, is not an ecclesiastical one, and he therefore does not have the authority to act in the archbishop's stead, nor is he ordained to this stewardship. The archbishop and vice-archbishops must meet with the diocesan council at least once a month to discuss diocesan business, plan future courses of action, and to seek counsel. They should meet every 2 months with the bishops and vice bishops of all the wards in the diocese, to do the same. Dioceses should hold a conference every 6 months, during which the members of all the congregations of the diocese meet together for an extended communal sacrament of about 2 hours. No other church worship services should be held that day. The extended time is to allow for the conduct of diocesan business and for additional talks and testimonies. On the Saturday evening 4 weeks before the diocesan conference, the qualified voters of the diocese meet to counsel together about the diocese and make binding decisions for the diocese. Generally, the terms of diocesan stewards expire at diocesan conference. Thus, at this meeting, the qualified voters select, as necessary, the next diocesan stewards, whether because a steward's term is set to expire at the upcoming conference or because a position was made vacant since the prior diocesan conference because the man left his stewardship early, as well as current or anticipated vacancies at the provincial level. The qualified voters of the diocese fill any vacancies through a similar process of sortition as used at the ward level. If 3 or fewer positions are vacant, then the 10 highest scoring names are placed on the sortition list. If between 4 and 8 positions are to be filled, then the 20 highest scoring names should be placed on the sortition list. If more than 8 positions are to be filled, then 30 names should be placed on the sortition list. In all cases, if there is a tie for last place, then one name among those tied is randomly selected and placed on the list. All names are presented for approval to the qualified voters in the wards of the diocese over the next 3 weeks. Men thus selected and approved to serve in diocesan stewardship positions are ordained to their stewardships at the upcoming diocesan conference. If more than one steward is to be ordained, then the preliminary question and answer parts of the rite may be conducted jointly with all candidates, with each responding in turn to the questions, but then each being individually ordained. If the stewardship of first vice archbishop becomes vacant, then the second vice archbishop becomes first vice archbishop. If the stewardship of second or both first and second vice archbishop becomes vacant, then the archbishop may designate any member of the diocesan council to be acting vice archbishop until the vacancy be filled at the next diocesan conference. If the stewardship of archbishop becomes vacant, then the first vice archbishop acts as archbishop until a new archbishop, usually the first vice archbishop, is selected and ordained. If the stewardships of archbishop and both vice archbishops all become vacant at the same time, then the longest serving 3 members of the diocesan council become acting archbishop and vice archbishops until new men be approved. No man should serve more than 1 6-year course as a diocesan steward, unless there are no other qualified men in the diocese who have not done so. No man should serve as diocesan secretary for more than 3 2-year terms. A diocesan committee of 3 disinterested elders randomly selected from the archbishop, vice archbishops, and diocesan council may adjudicate disputes between members of different wards in the same diocese. They may also adjudicate disputes between members of the same ward, if resolution was not achieved at the ward level. Provinces. A province is the highest level of church organization. Each province is co-equal with each other province. A province is governed by its qualified voters. It is stewarded by a cardinal, a first vice cardinal, a second vice cardinal, and a provincial council of 12 elders. If there are 12 or fewer dioceses in the province, each diocese should have at least 1 elder on the council. If there are more than 12 dioceses in the province, the number on the council should be expanded to match the number of dioceses in the province, and each councillor should be from a different diocese. Once the province has grown to more than 12 dioceses, it should begin the process to divide into 2 provinces of roughly equal size. No province should ever have more than 16 dioceses. Provincial stewards should delegate as much as possible to spread the burden and the blessings of experience. A cardinal normally serves a term of 2 years. When the stewardship of cardinal becomes vacant, if the qualified voters of the province approve, the first vice cardinal is ordained cardinal, the second vice cardinal becomes the first cardinal, no ordination is necessary, and a new man is selected and ordained as the second vice cardinal. Typically, 4 members of the provincial council are selected each year. They serve 2 years as junior counselors, 2 years as counselors, and 2 years as senior counselors. In the normal course of events, a provincial steward serves for a total of 6 years, 2 years in each position, whether on the council or the cardinalate. The qualifications for serving in a provincial stewardship position are the same as for ordination as an elder, except that a man must already have first served as a ward or diocesan steward to be voted onto the sortition list for a position as a provincial steward. The cardinal selects an elder in the province to serve as provincial secretary. The secretary generally should have the experience of having already served as a cardinal or provincial counselor. He performs clerical and administrative tasks for the province and can offer advice to the cardinal. His position, however, is not an ecclesiastical one, and he therefore does not have the authority to act in the cardinal's stead, nor is he ordained to this stewardship. The cardinal and vice-cardinals must meet with the provincial council at least once a month to discuss provincial business, plan future courses of action, and to seek counsel. They should meet every 2 months with the archbishops and vice-archbishops of all the dioceses in the province to do the same. Provinces should hold a provincial conference once a year, during which the members of the province meet together for an extended communal sacrament of about 2 hours. No other church worship services should be held that day. The extended time is to allow for the conduct of provincial business and for additional talks. The cardinal, vice-cardinals, and the provincial council conduct the conference. Each diocese within the province should be represented at the conference by their archbishop, vice-archbishops, and diocesan council. Each ward should be represented by its bishop and vice-bishops. Provincial, diocesan, and ward stewards should invite and encourage every member of the church within the province to also attend in person. A provincial conference should always be recorded for retransmission to the province members and should be broadcast live whenever the capability is available. Generally, the terms of provincial stewards expire at provincial conference. During the diocesan conferences just prior to the planned provincial conference, the qualified voters also vote to fill all anticipated or current vacancies in provincial stewardship positions through an identical process of voting and sortition as used at the diocesan level. If three or fewer positions are vacant, then the 10 highest scoring names are placed on the sortition list. If between 4 and 8 positions are to be filled, then the 20 highest scoring names should be placed on the sortition list. If more than 8 positions are to be filled, then 30 names should be placed on the sortition list. In all cases, if there is a tie for last place, then one name among those tied is randomly selected and placed on the list. Each diocese transmits its vote information to the province 5 weeks before the provincial conference is to happen. All sitting provincial stewards jointly meet as soon as possible after receiving the vote information. At this meeting, diocesan stewards, bishops, and vice-bishops should also attend. In full view of all present and while being recorded for later viewing and, if possible, live broadcast, the provincial stewards draw out the required number of names and then immediately publicize these names to the dioceses of the province. All names are presented for approval to the qualified voters in the wards of all the dioceses over the next 3 weeks. All new, approved provincial stewards are ordained at the upcoming provincial conference. If more than one steward is to be ordained, then the preliminary question and answer parts of the rite may be conducted jointly with all candidates, with each responding in turn to the questions, and then each being individually ordained. If the stewardship of first vice cardinal becomes vacant, then the second vice cardinal becomes first vice cardinal. If the stewardship of second or both first and second vice cardinal becomes vacant, then the cardinal may designate any member of the provincial council to be acting vice cardinal until the vacancy be filled at the next provincial conference. If the stewardship of cardinal becomes vacant, then the first vice cardinal acts as cardinal until a new cardinal, usually the first vice cardinal, is selected and ordained. If the stewardships of cardinal and both vice cardinals all become vacant at the same time, then the longest serving 3 members of the diocesan council become acting cardinal and vice cardinals until new men be approved. Provincial meetings should always be recorded for retransmission to all church members in the province and should be broadcast live whenever the capability is available. No decision taken at a provincial conference may take effect until approved by a majority of the eligible qualified votes within the province. No man should serve more than one six-year course as a provincial steward. No man should serve as provincial secretary for more than 3 2-year terms. A provincial committee of 3 disinterested elders randomly selected from the cardinal, vice cardinals, and provincial council may adjudicate disputes between members of different dioceses in the same province. They may also adjudicate disputes between members of the same ward or diocese if resolution was not achieved at the ward and diocesan level. Any decision by provincial stewards regarding doctrine, interpretation of this book, major church policies and practices, or any other major financial or substantive decision must first be proposed to a provincial meeting of qualified voters who are elders, to be held in conjunction with provincial conference, fully discussed at such a meeting, approved by a majority of qualified votes at the meeting, and then subsequently ratified and approved by a majority of qualified votes in the wards of the province. Any decision about doctrine, major practice or policy, or interpretation of this book must then be ratified by a churchwide vote in conjunction with the next churchwide meeting. If it is not ratified, then the General Conference or Holy Synod that declined to ratify the interpretation must substitute its own approved interpretation that must then be approved by a churchwide vote. Churchwide meetings. A General Conference of the whole Church shall meet every 2 years to discuss churchwide business and, if necessary, changes to church policy. The General Conference is hosted by one of the Church provinces on a rotating basis to be decided at a prior General Conference or Holy Synod. Every 10 years, instead of a General Conference, shall be held a Holy Synod of the Church at which changes to Church Scripture and core Church practice may be made. The only persons who may vote at a Holy Synod are qualified voters in good standing, who are elders. All provincial stewards should be present at churchwide meetings. Stewards should invite and encourage every other member of the church within their province to attend. Never at churchwide meetings, nor at any other time, should any one person or small group purport to take upon themselves or themselves leadership of the whole church. Churchwide meetings should always be recorded for retransmission to all church members and should always be broadcast live whenever the capability is available. Decisions at a general conference must be approved by a 3/5 vote of the eligible qualified votes of those present. No decision taken at a general conference may take effect until approved by 3/5 of the eligible qualified votes within the entire church and by majorities of qualified votes in a majority of wards, a majority of dioceses, and a majority of provinces. Decisions at a Holy Synod must be approved by a 2/3 vote of the eligible qualified votes of the elders present. No decision taken at a Holy Synod may take effect until ratified first by 2/3 of the eligible qualified votes of elders churchwide, after which it is to be presented for a churchwide vote and must be approved by 2/3 of the eligible qualified votes within the entire church and by majorities of qualified votes in a majority of wards, dioceses, and provinces, and then again approved at the next general conference, following the normal procedures for general conference votes. A general conference or holy synod may establish judicial committees to adjudicate disputes between members of different provinces and to offer interpretations of this book and church practice. Any decision regarding interpretation of this book or church practice does not become binding on the church until it is first ratified by the same process as ratifying a change to that section of this book. The General Conference shall establish and update as needed standardized administrative, financial, and clerical procedures for wards, dioceses, and provinces to ensure 1. That children and all other church members are protected from abuse or other exploitation, including requirements that all church members, and especially stewards, immediately contact law enforcement upon receiving credible information about abuse, 2. The wise and faithful collection and expenditure of funds, 3. Consistent keeping of records, 4. The orderly function of wards, dioceses, and provinces, and 5. Procedures for expelling wayward branches, wards, dioceses, and provinces from the church. Each ward, diocese, and province shall exist as an independent legal entity maintaining its own separate finances and ownership of property and buildings. Because we believe in eating in a healthy and moderate manner and exercising to keep our bodies fit and strong, and also because the body is the temple of your soul and a dwelling for the Spirit of God, we should work to be as healthy as possible, so that we may run and not be weary, and walk and not faint. The General Conference therefore shall establish basic age, sex, and disability-adjusted physical fitness requirements for initiation, ordination of priests and elders, and for status as a qualified voter. The first General Conference shall create interim standardized rules for evaluating a candidate's qualifications for a right and granting permission to receive the right. It shall also create interim rules about excommunication, both to clarify procedures to be followed and what offenses are excommunicable. The First General Conference shall also consider whether the Church should recognize and venerate saints, and if so, the process by which this should be realized. These interim rules about rights, excommunication, and saints shall be amended and ratified as needed by subsequent General Conferences, and then finalized by the First Holy Synod. During the lifetime of the founder of the Church, he shall have the power to make direct proposals to a Holy Synod or General Conference for their consideration or ratification, and also to veto actions of a Holy Synod or General Conference. Relief Society, Women's Organization. There shall be a parallel auxiliary women's organization organized, created, headed, and run by the women of the Church. It shall be called the Relief Society, and shall have similar organizational principles, structure, and leadership positions to that of the rest of the Church. At each level of the Church, the Relief Society shall be headed entirely by women, with the stewardship positions at each level consisting of a president, two vice presidents, and a council of 12 women. Heritage and tradition. Knowing the identity and history of one's ancestors, as well as being familiar with our traditions and practicing them, can help one feel rooted and connected, and can be an important source of meaning and life stability. Therefore, to help cultivate greater respect and pride for heritage and tradition, wards, dioceses, and provinces should establish programs and provide resources to help and encourage members to research and learn more about their family history and our cultural traditions. Stewardship. Stewards work to ensure the proper and smooth functioning of the Church. They serve for limited terms. Stewards' most important role is to conserve the nature, practices, and traditions of the Church. Members should only vote for stewards who have already demonstrated a strong commitment to doing so. Generally, stewards should be 70 years of age or younger. During initial stages of church organization, temporary measures and waivers will be made as necessary to allow for the organization of congregations and ordination of stewards, even though the required familial situation or time periods of membership or practice have not been met. Removal of stewards. The qualified voters may remove any steward by a majority of the qualified votes within the ward, diocese, or province. Excommunication. Any church member who has engaged in or is engaging in any of the following shall be excommunicated: sexual abuse, gross indecency or immorality, criminal behavior, other egregious unvirtuous conduct, unjustified divorce, except that if the divorce was not mutually agreed upon, then excommunication would only be for the party that sued for divorce, and divorce by couples with children should be treated as far more grave than divorce by childless couples, apostasy, or other conduct that brings the Church into grave disrepute. Any qualified voter may refer a church member who is engaged in such conduct to the member's diocesan stewards for consideration for excommunication. The case shall be heard by a joint meeting of the archbishop, vice archbishops, and diocesan council of the church member's diocese. They shall follow formal procedures of a judicial nature to weigh the evidence in favor and against the person, and then decide upon the excommunication, which must be ratified by the province's cardinal, vice cardinals, and provincial council, even if the excommunicant has not appealed the excommunication. Once the diocese has decided to excommunicate a member, the person shall no longer be considered to be a baptized member of the Church. The diocese may decide to exclude that person from attendance at church meetings and gatherings, if it determines this to be in the best interest of the Church and its members. Otherwise, the person may attend church meetings and gatherings and should be treated as any other non-member. If the excommunicant disputes the excommunication decision, he or she may request an appeal of the diocese's decision to the cardinal, vice cardinals, and provincial council, who shall meet jointly, following formal procedures of a judicial nature, to determine whether the diocese's decision conforms with the principles of this book, the creed, the doctrines of the church and church traditions, standards and principles. The excommunicated member may appeal the province's decision to the judicial council of the next general conference or holy synod, which shall follow formal procedures of a judicial nature to determine whether the diocese's and province's decisions conform with the principles of this book, the creed, the doctrines of the church and church traditions, standards and principles. During the time of appeals, the person's status shall remain as excommunicated. If the person's appeal is granted, then the person shall be restored to full membership with all its rights and responsibilities. An excommunicated person who does not appeal the excommunication, or who has not prevailed in his or her appeals, shall usually only be eligible for rebaptism after 5 years, unless the province establishes a different time period. The person must also have sincerely repented of his or her wrongdoing. In the case of criminal misconduct, such repentance requires that the wrongdoer fully and freely disclose his or her conduct to law enforcement. The person must then be newly baptized, confirmed, initiated, and ordained as if a new member. Amendments and additions to Canon of Scripture. During the life of the author of this book, changes may be made to this book, the Codex, and the spiritual sense only with the consent of the author, either on his own initiative or with input from church members or others. Once the church is duly and fully organized, such changes only become final after accepted at a general conference or holy synod, and such changes may be proposed at a general conference or holy synod as set forth above. After the death of the author of this book, only a holy synod may make changes or additions to the Codex, the spiritual sense, and to this book. The recognition of new books of Scripture may also only be made by a holy synod. All such action by a holy synod should then be ratified by a general conference and subsequent church-wide vote. Changes or addition to Scripture should be made incrementally and slowly, and only after the change or addition has proved itself without doubt to be necessary. All changes and additions should respect the great weight of our tradition, conform to the creed, and lead individuals more towards seeking wisdom, practicing virtue, and laboring with hope. After the death of the author, changes to the Codex, the spiritual sense, and to this book should be avoided absent highly compelling circumstances. Instead, as new doctrine and inspiring words are needed, members of the church should write them and propose them to a holy synod, and later ratification by a general conference and church-wide vote, for inclusion in a new book to be titled the Book of Further Elaboration, which shall grow by accretion, addition, and editing as changing circumstances require and as further light and wisdom are gained. More detailed procedures for making the changes and additions described in the above two paragraphs shall be introduced as church growth requires such procedures. Priesthood offices. The following offices may be held by male church members: junior deacon, senior deacon, priest, and elder. Elders may also serve as stewards of their branches, wards, dioceses, and province, as chief elders, bishops, vice bishops, archbishops, vice archbishops, cardinals, vice cardinals, and counselors. The qualifications for each office are explained in the introductory explanation for each rite of ordination. Junior deacons. Junior deacons are usually ordained at 14 years of age and serve until turning 16, at which time they are ordinarily ordained as senior deacons. Junior deacons assist the bishop and vice bishops, the officiant of a rite, and senior deacons as needed to ensure the proper and smooth functioning of communal sacrament services. Their primary role is to prepare the bread and water of the sacrament before the start of communal sacrament services and to distribute them during the service. They prepare it by placing unbroken bread in sacrament trays, filling small sacrament cups with water, and placing them all on a table to be blessed. They distribute it by carrying trays to each row of the ward, to be passed down the row by those seated on the row. Senior deacons. Senior deacons may be ordained starting at 16 years of age and usually serve until turning 18, at which time they are ordinarily ordained as priests. Senior deacons assist the bishop and vice bishops and the officiant of a rite as needed to ensure the proper and smooth functioning of communal sacrament services. Their primary role is to bless the bread and water of the sacrament during communal sacrament services and to act as ushers when needed at church meetings. They also assist the bishop and vice bishops as needed in working to help ensure the welfare of ward members in need. Senior deacons may fulfill any of the functions of a junior deacon when the need arises. Priests. Priests are usually ordained at 18 years of age in connection with their initiation. Priests should be familiar with the teachings of this book and are to teach, expound, exhort, and watch over the church. They may officiate, plan, and conduct communal sacrament meetings according to the teachings of this book and the requirements of wisdom, virtue, and hope. Priests should care for the church's physical and spiritual needs in harmony with the requirements of this book and the norms, rules, and practice of the church. Two priests or elders should be assigned to each family or household in the ward to visit once a month, to share a spiritual message in harmony with this book, to support and assist the family as needed, and to inquire into the family's welfare and report any urgent needs to the bishop and vice bishops. If possible, the pair generally should be one elder and one priest. When a priest or elder has a son who is a deacon, the father should be assigned with his deacon son, rather than with another priest or elder. Priests must be lovers of wisdom, virtue, and hope, and sober, sensible, devout, and respectable. They must hold to the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. They must not be double-tongued, drinkers of much alcohol, or greedy. They must have proved themselves through their prior service and participation in the church. Priests serve as needed in their ward to ensure its smooth functioning. They act as officiants for all rites except for the following: the ordination of elders, the ordination of stewards, marriage, and the burial of the dead. Whenever officiating a rite, private or public, a priest should be dressed in a formal and respectful manner, also wearing his stole, except when acting as a baptizer. It is not necessary to wear a stole when performing the rite of repentance. When the need arises, priests may fulfill any of the functions of a deacon. Elders. An elder is ordained when a man has been deemed worthy of and qualified for the calling by the qualified voters in his ward, as demonstrated by his placement on a sortition list for selection as a bishop or a vice bishop. Elders should be intimately familiar with the teachings of this book and be able to independently teach, expound, exhort, and watch over the church. They may officiate, plan, and conduct communal sacrament services according to the teachings of this book and the requirements of wisdom, virtue, and hope. Elders should administer the church's physical and spiritual needs in accord with the requirements of this book and the norms, rules, and practice of the church. Elders must be lovers of wisdom, virtue, and hope, and upright, blameless, and above reproach. They must not be slanderers, double-tongued, drinkers of much alcohol, greedy, quarrelsome, or quick-tempered. They must be sober, sensible, prudent, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, patient, disposed to teach, and devout. They must hold to the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. They must have a firm grasp of the words of this book to both preach sound doctrine and refute those trying to contradict it. They should manage their own household well and also be well thought of by outsiders. They must have proved themselves through their prior service and participation in the church. Elders serve, administer, and lead as needed in their ward to ensure its smooth functioning. Any elder may act as officiant for all rites of the Church of the West, except for the ordination of stewards, which are to be conducted by someone holding an equivalent or higher stewardship at the time of ordination. Whenever officiating a rite, private or public, an elder should be dressed in a formal and respectful manner, also wearing his stole, except when acting as a baptizer. It is not necessary to wear a stole when performing the rite of repentance. When the need arises, elders may fulfill any of the functions of a priest or deacon. Church buildings. A chapel is the name of 1. A building or space used by a branch for communal sacrament. 2. Any private space set apart for worship, prayer, and sacrament services. Or 3. Any smaller space in a church, cathedral, or basilica used primarily for worship, prayer, and/or private sacrament services, separate from the larger sanctuary used for communal sacrament. A ward church is a building used by a ward for its main meeting place and for communal sacrament. A cathedral is a building used as the main meeting place for a diocese and where the diocese's archbishop is based. A cathedral may also be used by one or more wards within the diocese as their main meeting place. A basilica is a building used as the main meeting place for a province and where the province's cardinal is based. A basilica may also be used by one or more dioceses or wards within the province as their main meeting place. That we might more easily love our churches should be made lovely. All church buildings should be traditionally beautiful and inspiring in appearance. A church building that is purpose-built should preferably be in the nature of one of the following architectural styles: Neo-Gothic, Neoclassical, Beaux-Arts, American Colonial, Georgian, or American Federal. A church, cathedral, or basilica should, wherever possible, have a tower with church bells. As permitted by local laws, regulations, and customs, the bells should be rung 5 minutes before the start of communal sacrament, and also immediately following the closing prayer. The bells should also be rung as appropriate during feasts and other rites and observances. Wherever possible, the grounds of a church, cathedral, or basilica should have a sacred tree, and also an accompanying sacred grove to be used as a quiet, sacred, beautiful place for contemplation and prayer. Wherever possible, the grounds should also have a grass field with a maypole. Between the feasts of May Day and Tricrux, weather permitting and at the discretion of the bishop, vice bishops, and officiant, communal sacrament may be held outside on the field. The final charge. You have received the right principles you ought to accept. What sort of teacher, then, do you still wait for, to put off reforming yourself? You are no longer a child. If you are negligent and slothful, procrastinating day after day the time for seeking wisdom, practicing virtue, and laboring with hope, then without realizing it, you will sit stagnant until the end, persevering in your foolishness, evil, and lazy despair. This instant, then, right now, stand tall and think of yourself as worthy of living as a man or woman progressing forward on the triple path. Let the principles of wisdom, virtue, and hope be to you as a law which must never be violated. What now? If this book speaks to you and you would like to get more involved, you can. 1. Sign up for our email newsletter at triplepath.org/newsletter to get weekly updates and uplifting messages. 2. Listen to our weekly podcast at triplepath.org/podcast. 3. Find others to worship with at triplepath.org/congregations. There, you can find out if there is a ward in your area. If you would like to start an unrecognized branch in your area, we can put you in contact with any others in your area also desiring to do so. Or you can start practicing the rites and feasts of the Church of the West as an individual or with your family. 4. Spread the word by telling your friends about this book, or by giving a copy to a friend or your local library. 5. Leave positive ratings or reviews of this book online. It is available at all major outlets. A short list of links to places where you can leave reviews is at triplepath.org/review. This is not the final edition of this book. It represents more than 10 years of sincere effort, but there is much room for improvement in all aspects. The intent is that this book might become a communal effort. It is open to contribution, correction, and feedback from all readers. To contact the author or send any suggested contributions or corrections, send an email to inquiries@triplepath.org.